Welcome to the Crispin Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Crispin. Topics on today's episode include the Fed on hold, my interview with attorney Peter Idziak on the final rule that bans non-compete clauses in employment contracts, which the FTC ruled on last week, and what we've learned from a couple labor market indicators ahead of tomorrow's payrolls report. Thanks to today's podcast sponsor, Essex Mortgage. Essex specializes in providing exceptional mortgage subservicing solutions tailored to meet your specific needs. Looking to capitalize on your excess servicing strip? Check out Essex's servicing offerings today. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee, or FOMC, grabbed the headlines despite doing exactly what everybody expected them to do. Leave rates unchanged. Inflation is still higher than the FOMC would like. Yes, as was widely expected, the FOMC voted unanimously to keep interest rates unchanged for the sixth consecutive meeting yesterday. The Fed stated, quote, "There has been a lack of further progress toward the committee's 2% inflation objective," end quote, implying they will remain on hold until economic data confirms inflation is decreasing. Despite no change in the overnight rate target, the statement did confirm an expected change concerning a tapering of the speed with which Treasury securities will roll off the Fed's balance sheet. It will decrease to $25 billion maximum per month beginning in June from $60 billion previously. The FOMC did not change the ongoing passive roll-off of its MBS holdings, but did note that any prepayments beyond the continuing $35 billion cap will be reinvested in Treasuries. During his press conference, Fed Chairman Powell acknowledged that a rate hike this year is unlikely. For today's interview, I want to welcome back to the show attorney Peter Idziak to talk about the final rule that bans non-compete clauses in employment contracts. The Federal Trade Commission voted 3-2 last week in favor of the ban, which does apply retroactively, meaning business with non-compete clauses for their employees, except those considered senior executives, are no longer enforceable. As some of you may know, Peter Idziak is Polinsky Bidelgreen's senior associate, representing clients in all areas of residential mortgage lending, with a focus on regulatory matters and compliance issues concerning all aspects of consumer lending and real property law. The Federal Trade Commission voted 3-2 in favor of a final rule that bans non-compete clauses in employment contracts. Why is this happening now? Can you give us a little background on why it actually got voted on recently and any pertinent facts of arguments that the FTC might have heard?
Sure. So this is sort of the result of a July 2021 executive order from President Biden, intended to promote competition in the American economy. And one of the things it did was it directed the FTC to look at the use of non-competes. So subsequent to that, in 2023, the FTC issued an initial rule that would have effectively banned all non-competes, existing and new, took comments on it, received apparently 27,000 comments, which is a very, very large number of comments for a proposed rule. And then in April, as you stated, this year, voted 3-2 to approve a final rule that essentially kept most of the initial rule with some changes. But the effect is that all non-competes between employers and workers are now banned. That includes new and existing non-competes, but there is an exception in the final rule for existing non-competes with so-called senior executives. The FTC claims that it has authority under Section 5 of the FTC Act, which bans and prohibits unfair methods of competition. And the FTC believes that non-competes, as they are used, are an unfair method of competition because they restrict workers from taking their services elsewhere, employers from competing for those workers, and workers from establishing new businesses.
So it looks like the ban applies retroactively as well. And you mentioned that, for lack of a better term, is it kind of the Wild
West now? Anybody can transfer companies freely? Is that too broad of a statement? How do you view where we are currently?
Well, the rule is intended to become effect 120 days after it's published in the Federal Register. It actually hasn't been published yet as of today. So it's not in effect yet. And there are also, we can talk about this more a little bit later, some court challenges that may delay implementation of the rule as well. Is it the Wild West, you know, assuming that the rule does go into effect? Not necessarily. There is a carve out in the rule for existing non-competes with senior executives. And those are people who make an excess of, and very specific number here, $151,146 in the previous year, and are in a policymaking position for the entire business. That's intended to be a narrow exception. So existing non-competes for those senior executives can remain in force. For any other non-compete, it, both existing and you know, you'd be prohibited from entering into a new one, those could not apply or be enforced against any other workers. So will this, according to the FTC, spur competition and employees moving from company to company? I would say probably, but employers do still have the ability to, you know, in a sense, prohibit their trade secrets and other important company information from being used against them, because the rule does not explicitly ban non-solicitation agreements or non-disclosure agreements. And there are also trade secrets acts that would prohibit employees from taking proprietary information from their, you know, former employer to their new employer.
How do you feel like this is going to impact the mortgage industry? Obviously, LOs move around a lot. Compensation there is a factor. I know several people with non-competes, but they were mostly executives. Bring this home to mortgage for listeners.
So one of the interesting things about the mortgage industry, and this is due to the FTC's jurisdiction or lack thereof, is the FTC does not have authority over banks, savings and loan associations, and federal credit unions. So for the mortgage industry, you're going to have this interesting dichotomy where if you have workers that are working for a bank, the bank can enforce a non-compete against them and prohibit them from going to work for, you know, a mortgage bank, whereas a mortgage banker could not necessarily prohibit their employees from, you know, going over and working with a bank. So I think that is an interesting wrinkle in the mortgage industry. The other thing is, and from my sort of experience, is that, as you said, a lot of the non-competes are at the executive level. For LOs, underwriters, you know, more blue-collar employees, you're going to see that they are able to move around more often. But having said that, you know, non-solicitation, both employee and customer non-solicitation agreements are still being enforceable, and non-disclosure agreements as well. So, you know, to the extent that you have employees that are seeking to, you know, take client lists with them, that would still be prohibited.
And to your first point there, do you feel like it's going to create advantages or disadvantages based on the type of institution interacting in the mortgage space?
Yeah, I do think that you will see some advantages for those companies that aren't subject to the rule. I think that that's sort of obvious. You know, the FTC, interestingly, in their comments to the final rule said, well, you know, just because we don't have authority over every business doesn't mean that we shouldn't, you know, seek to enforce these bans against those businesses that we do have authority over. So I do think that you'll see advantages accrue towards these banks, federal credit unions that are able to continue to enforce their non-competes against senior executives. But again, you know, those are only for existing non-competes. So over time, as, you know, people move around or they get promoted up into these senior executive levels, you know, people retire, move out of the industry, or you promote new people into senior executive positions, you cannot enforce non-compete. So they can go over to a depository and you cannot prohibit that. Whereas if you are a bank or a credit union, you know, in the future, you will be able to continue to enter into non-competes with your with your employees and enforce them. You know, there may be an argument that, well, you know, the economic incentives for employees or potential employees will be such that they'd rather work for a mortgage bank that can't enforce a non-compete versus a depository where they are limited. But at the end of the day, it is still, you know, an unlevel playing field for different lenders within the space.
There are several states that have already substantially banned non-competes. Do you feel like that gives us an indication of how this will play out moving forward?
You know, one thing the rule does is it does preempt any state laws that are less restrictive than the final rule. So you will see, because historically this has been regulated at the state level and not the federal level. So you will see, I think, in a lot of states that there is a move towards, as you put it earlier, a more Wild West arena where employees are able to move from company to company. The FTC has pointed to the fact that, you know, in these states, California is a prime example where non-competes are effectively banned, that, you know, the sky didn't fall, that businesses are able to operate and compete. So part of their justification is that this rule will help promote competition, which will, you know, inure a benefit to consumers. And interestingly, it also, the FTC also points out that the benefits will accrue to workers. It estimates that, you know, the average worker will see their wages rise by $523 a year due to the rule. Whether that will actually happen remains to be seen.
Yeah, my next question was going to be, how can people take advantage, for lack of a better term, of this ruling, or I guess leverage this to their own personal gain?
Well, if you're a worker, you know, the potential upside is that, and to take a step back, one of the reasons that the FTC has proposed this ban is that it found that not the use of non-competes has expanded significantly over the last several decades. And according to its numbers, some one in five American workers are subject to a non-compete. So it's gone from, you know, legitimate targeted non-competes for senior executives, salespeople, individuals with, you know, access to proprietary or trade secret information, to frontline workers. You know, the rule talks about security guards, baristas, you know, barbers and hairdressers being subject to non-competes when these folks, you know, really have no specialized information or trade secrets. So for workers in that position, and not just in the mortgage industry, but I think that they will now know that they have the ability to move jobs. One of the things that the rule found, and from a lot of comments, is that a lot of lower income or lower skill workers sign non-competes that would probably be unenforceable if a company attempted to enforce it in court. But it effectively served to prohibit these folks from quitting and either starting a competing business or changing jobs because they believed that they were subject to this non-compete, or they were worried that the employer might sue them and they lack the income to, you know, challenge and defend themselves in court, or their employer would tell the, you know, prospective new employer that this person is subject to a non-compete and they wouldn't be hired. So for those folks, I think there will be a big benefit, because one thing the rule does do is it requires employers who have workers subject to these non-competes to send out a notice that says, you know, you are no longer subject to this non-compete. So they will have, you know, something affirmative from their employer that says, hey, you're no longer subject to this non-compete. So I do think for those types of workers, you will see them moving jobs more often. You will see them starting their own businesses more often. And that is one of the goals of the rule. So if you are in that position, you can take advantage of that. The downside is that non-competes were often given in exchange for employers providing specialized training or other additional consideration. For example, if you need to maintain a license by taking courses, the employer would pay for that, or some other consideration. You may now see employers that are less willing to do that and tell the employee that, you know, it's more up to you to finance and fund that, because we don't get the benefit of, you know, your expertise if you can immediately leave and go work for one of our competitors.
As you mentioned at the beginning, the final rule will go into effect 120 days after the publication in the Federal Register, which I believe was in late April. And you said there were likely to be court challenges. How do you see this progressing from here?
So there are already, as far as I'm aware, three challenges that have been filed. Two are from private companies. The third is probably where you're going to see the most action. And that's a lawsuit that was filed by multiple business organizations and led by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And it was filed in the Eastern District of Texas. So the chamber has moved for a preliminary injunction that would prohibit the FTC from enforcing the rule and postponing the rule's effective date. So before the rule ever becomes effective, we will know in that court action whether the judge has stayed enforcement of the rule or issued an injunction that prohibits the FTC from enforcing it. And the Eastern District of Texas so far and historically has not been that kind to Biden administration executive agencies that are promulgating rules that seek to sort of increase the authority of that agency or action that's subject to their regulation. So there's a strong likelihood, in my opinion, that the court in this case will stay enforcement of the rule. So we might not see, definitive judgment for, 12 to 18 months at the minimum on this. And there are, two major theories that are challenging this rule, and it's sort of the same in what's been going on with a lot of other agency action, including CFPB. The first is that this agency action violates what they call the major questions doctrine. And that's a doctrine of constitutional interpretation that says that when delegating rulemaking authority to an agency on questions of, quote, vast economic and political significance, that Congress must provide clear and direct authority to the agent to do so. And the argument against that here is that, Section 5 of the FTC Act has been in place for over 100 years. And it's very broad, just says, reference to unfair methods of competition, and that reference in the statute is not specific enough to allow the FTC to issue rules on non-competes when, previous to this, they really have not sought to enforce bans against non-competes. The other is a little bit more technical, and it's something called the non-delegation doctrine. And it says that, Congress may not delegate powers which are strictly and exclusively legislative under the Constitution to another branch. But if they can confer substantial discretion on these agencies, but they have to, quote, lay down by legislative act an intelligible principle to which the agency is directed to conform. And here the argument is that, unfair methods of competition is so vague, there's no intelligible principle here that would allow the agency to issue rules on this. Now, Eastern District is within the Fifth Circuit. Fifth Circuit, for those that are not aware, has gone down the route of finding against Biden administration agencies in similar situations to this. So, my thought is, at least at the Fifth Circuit, that the panel of judges that end up, hearing this on appeal, which they almost certainly will, they will find that, this is not, the proposed rule is not within the FTC's powers.
So do you see this going to the Supreme Court eventually?
I think so. This is really sort of a similar kind of course of action and outcome as you've seen with some of the CFPB rulemaking, that business groups challenge it within a district court in Texas. It goes up to the Fifth Circuit. Fifth Circuit rules that the agency action is unconstitutional, and then it gets appealed to the Supreme Court. You know, there are a few issues before the court right now that should be ruled on by the end of the court's term in June of this year that may shed some light on, you know, how this agency action will go in the future. But, you know, in my opinion, with the current makeup of the court, that this rule would likely be struck down as it stands by the Supreme Court, should they hear it.
And finally, before I let you go, have any mortgage advocacy groups come out with statements about this? If so, what have they said? And if not, what do you feel like their position would be?
To my knowledge, I have not seen anyone come out with a statement yet. They may have provided comments to the final rule. As I said, there were 27,000, so quite a large number of folks in this country are, you know, paying attention to this and concerned about it. I think that they would view this as beneficial for consumers. The idea being that, you know, competition reduces prices for consumers. So the idea being that if you're allowing employees to compete, you know, amongst employers for their services, that this will lead to better outcomes for consumers. The counter argument I can see, though, is that, and it's interesting, the FTC focused on the increased wages that employees should be able to realize due to being able to switch jobs, is, well, you know, if employees are making more money, well, usually whenever wages increase, prices have to increase as well. So the FTC was a little, you know, suspect on kind of the connection between increased employees' wages versus, you know, lower prices for consumers. But to answer your question, I think mortgage advocacy groups would generally be in favor of a ban on non-competes.
I agree with you there. Peter, thanks for the time, man. Informative as always. Love having you on the show. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure.
The rate and price that borrowers see is a combination of several factors, most notably mortgage-backed security prices and servicing values. Yes, collecting that monthly payment and possibly financing it has value. Mortgage rates managed end the month of April with an increase of about 52 basis points, while float income rates have increased by an average of 30 basis points since the end of March. MSR portfolio holders should expect a moderate value recovery in the range of 2-6 basis points from the end of March. However, those increases will vary depending on portfolio vintages and other portfolio characteristics such as agency and Ginnie Mae mix. The down rate risk and its potential impact on MSR values will persist as we navigate through 2024. There were several economic releases of note yesterday. Total construction spending declined 0.2% in March, the second drop in 3 months. Residential spending weakened in March with pullbacks across both single-family and multifamily segments. Non-residential spending eked out a 0.2% gain, fueled by speculation on the public side, particularly for infrastructure products. The April ISM Manufacturing Index indicated a return to contraction for the manufacturing sector after last month posted the first expansionary figure since September. Ahead of tomorrow's payrolls report, the ADP employment change report pointed to the addition of 192,000 non-farm payrolls in April, while the March increase was revised up to 208,000 from 184,000. Today's economic calendar sees more labor market indicators ahead of tomorrow's jobs report. The calendar began with job cuts from Challenger Grain and Christmas for April, where U.S.-based employers announced 64,789 cuts, a 28% decrease from the 90,309 cuts announced 1 month prior. It's also down 3.3% from the roughly 67,000 cuts announced in the same month last year. Other releases today include weekly jobless claims, the March trade deficit, the first look at Q1 productivity and unit labor costs, March factory orders, and Freddie Mac's primary mortgage market survey. After all this news, we begin the day with agency MBS prices roughly unchanged from Wednesday's close, the 10-year yielding 4.59 after closing yesterday at 4.60%, and the 2-year at 4.93%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. Mark W. writes that he was on a Zoom call recently with an Englishman, a Frenchman, a Spaniard, and a Dutchman. Their boss asks, "Can you see me?" And they respond, "Yes, we see ya." Yes, we see ya. Thanks again to this week's podcast sponsor, Essex Mortgage. Essex specializes in providing exceptional mortgage subservicing solutions tailored to meet your specific needs.
If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.